The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Okay, well, you know, we really need some help on knowing where this market is going, and so we thought we'd reach out to one of the best experts that we know. We've got with us today Michael Santoli. Michael is a senior columnist at Yahoo Finance. You might remember him from Barron's Magazine. He was a feature writer at Barron's, and I know that Peggy and I were talking about this at the during the break, that they're still lamenting the fact that Michael is gone. So we are very fortunate to have him with us today. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I appreciate that. I think the folks at Barron's are doing okay at the moment.
Well, but I think they wish you were still there. And so, but we are really pleased to have you with us today. Now, you start out in an article. I was reading some of your articles this morning, and I really love the way you start one out. We're gonna bounce. So, now it looks like we've got a positive opening this morning. Not one that's ridiculously strong, but it looks like right now the S&P is going to open about. Oh, they'll open up about 10. The Dow futures are up 83. But what's going on here? Can you give some solace to our listeners, or at least explain to them what's going on?
Might be able to try to explain it. Notice I said we're going to bounce. I didn't say exactly when or exactly how much.
Right.
Because we really did have a really kind of oppressive bout of selling that hit this market in such a way that it really did stretch things pretty far to the downside. I think a lot of people have been looking at that this week and saying, look, a lot of damage has been done. You have less than 20% of all stocks are trading above their average for the past year. So that definitely tells you at least the inklings of some kind of a washout. I will say I think a lot of the tactical trader types don't like to see a market that failed to rally one day have a tentative 0.5% increase on the open the next day. A lot of times that just means it gets knocked back down again. But I do think that that on a very short-term basis, this thing really should bounce if it's not going to spill into something that gets really out of hand, and I don't see why it should at the moment. So what's going on is, honestly, a lot of things, as usually happens, kind of hitting the markets and hitting investor psyches at once. And the first is really the recession and deflation watch in Europe popping up again. And that just filters back to us in so many ways, including much stronger dollar over here, including credit markets, which have been really the leadership area of the whole financial markets in the last 5 years. They softened up again. People get a little bit nervous about credit quality. Greek government yields back above 7%. So it's kind of a warmed-over version of the Euro panic. And the bigger picture there is, there's not a deeply felt investor confidence that the European Central Bank is kind of, on the case. There's sort of a sense that there's not unity, there's not real commitment to trying to use monetary solutions or efforts to kind of back things up over there the way over here there was with the Fed, which meanwhile is perceived to be looking for an exit. So you combine all that with a market that was up 30% last year, that was not cheap anymore, and that you now kind of challenge one of the premises, which is economic acceleration, and I think that's the excuse here for some pent up selling to really spill out.
Yeah, and I agree. Do you think that we still have the possibility? And it's just anybody's guess, of course. But from what you're hearing out there, do you still think there's some more selling pressure out there? Because we have still not hit that magic 10% number, the one that all the professional traders are always talking about. We need a correction, we need a correction. And, of course, that doesn't come until you get the 10% number. Right now, I think we're down to, around 6 or 7 or so, which we've been here before in 2012, 2013. Even earlier this year, I think we hit a 6%. So it seems to me we're in this kind of this cycle. We go down 6, it's time to turn around and go back up again. Are there the makings out there to really get a correction?
I think this is the best shot of the ones we've seen in the last year and a half or so, or 2 years, to get one, mostly because nothing magic about the percentage decline for the S&P 500, except right now there's so much more damage below the surface that's already been done that it just seems like more of an anomaly that the actual index is kind of hanging up there. And so you're right, though. We've had these kind of incomplete corrections, and the trend has been so strong. And basically traders have been operating on the premise that it's heads I win, tails you lose, right? If the economy does really kind of pick up the pace, then we're in good shape because earnings are going to be there. If the economy falters a little bit, people will get excited about, you know, the Fed kind of being friendly for a longer period of time. And I think that relationship's been disturbed a little bit when you got to the valuations we got to, because I just don't think there's a ton of cushion in terms of the average stock and where it's valued relative to earnings. I don't think it's very expensive. I don't think it's anything like a bubble. But it just means like you kind of have to reset those valuations and reset the sentiment a little bit more. So, you know, I think there's another way. Of course, everyone can play these things from both sides of the coin. The other way of talking about how much damage has been done below the surface is that, hey, maybe we paid the price already. You know, maybe we bled out a lot of the excess from the mass majority of stocks, and that means that, you know, people can start hunting around for some value again. And I do think if the currency and the credit markets and the commodity markets, all related, if they calm down a little bit and stop kind of having these very volatile moves that throw a lot of the professional money managers off, then I do think you're going to see that process take hold. But, you know, we haven't had the kind of a really panicky flush lower that used to be you wanted to see before you were pretty confident that there was a durable bounce coming.
Right. Now, you spoke earlier, and you also spoke in your article about the about a reevaluation of world economic conditions, and you were talking about it a little bit earlier. One of the things that they've used in talking about France, for instance, is the D word, deflation, which is far more insidious than inflation. And of course, the European Central Bank doesn't really act the same as our Federal Reserve. They don't have the power. They don't have cooperation. I've always said that the Eurozone must have looked good on paper to somebody, because it's hard for us to get 50 states of the same country to think one way or another. And you're talking about different countries with different values and different histories. And in fact, some of them don't even like each other. Right. Trying to work together. But is there a possibility that Europe goes into deflation? Because if Europe goes into deflation, I'm pretty sure that it'll probably take us with it to a certain level.
You know, the markets are basically saying there's a pretty good chance that it at least skirts the edge of deflation right now. If you look at a lot of the indicators about where, you know, forward expectations of inflation are right now out 5 years, it basically is right there on the borderline. So, you know, today Germany came out and the Germans lowered their outlook for gross domestic product for Germany next year and the year after. And they're basically saying, 1.1% inflation is kind of what they're looking at for next year. There's just not a lot of room for error between 1.1 in a weakening economy and zero. So that's, I'm not saying we're there or that, you know, it's a foregone conclusion, but obviously that's the risk that is on, that's preoccupying the markets right now. And you're right, it's kind of game over. That I think one, interestingly, as people kind of look at that whole euro setup, as you kind of allude to, and how you almost have to kind of think of it as kind of game theory, you know, it's this country has certain priorities, the other one has others, how are they going to interact? One possible bright side of this round of difficulty versus 2011 is that the center of the pain is in Germany right now.
Right, right.
Because of the Russia stuff in the Ukraine. It's not about Greece and Portugal and Spain. The pain is in Germany. So the question is, does that make them more willing to have some kind of a spending-based solution or free the European Central Bank to do a little bit more?
Yeah, and that makes it, I think, a little more dangerous because Germany is, you know, they're really been the ones that have been holding up the Eurozone. I mean, much stronger economy than Greece, Portugal, Spain, and the rest. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, Michael, can you just stay with us a few more minutes? I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about your thoughts on a few other issues. So stay with us, folks. We've got Michael Santoli, senior columnist at Yahoo Finance. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Straight Talk Money. Back in a minute.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We are very fortunate today. If you're just joining us, we've got with us our special guest today is Michael Santoli. Michael, senior columnist at Yahoo Finance. He writes analysis and commentary on the stock market, corporate news, and the economy. He also appears on various video segments during the business day. He's covered Wall Street for over 20 years, including 15 years, and you might remember him as a featured columnist and writer for Barron's Magazine. And so we are very, very pleased to have him on today. And, Michael, as we come back, we were talking a little bit during the break, and something that's really big in our listening area, because we're in Texas and Colorado, for instance, is energy. And there's been a lot of push, as you know, on domestic production and shale. And as these energy prices come down, in fact, I think they're down again today, that really puts some pressure. You've got high energy prices to really make that shale pay off. What's happening here, and could this be a danger for the whole structure of the energy complex?
I think it's kind of raising that prospect anyway. I wouldn't say you have to, let's shut off all the projects right now. But, I'm looking at an index of small cap U.S. energy companies down 25% in a month. That's the S&P small cap energy ETF. The big guys are down 14% in a month, and that's all because of the commodity is down. They had the International Energy Agency also say, of course, demand is down, which the price was already telling you. And I do think at least we have this possibility of recognizing that there's been a lot of investment, arguably overinvestment, in projects that are highly dependent on, $80+ a barrel oil, whatever number you want to put out on there. And also, so many of these projects, while they've been successful in terms of production amounts, are not particularly cash flow positive. So you have to dial them down as things go south with the commodity price. So it's funny, because if you looked at, I don't want to be too alarmist about it, but if you look at prior kind of economic or market crises, you always had one area of the economy that got massive overinvestment, and people invested and spent on capital way, way in excess of what the fundamentals ultimately could bear. That was internet infrastructure in the late 90s, and then, of course, housing. And I think there's a possibility that that at least there's a lot of capital that's been thrown at energy in an uneconomic way domestically. Now, we're kind of used to the idea that lower energy prices are almost entirely a good for the United States as a whole, and it certainly is on the consumption side. But, I think we might just be seeing the flip side of Saudi America, so to speak. I don't want to say that it's done, or that oil prices can't, rebound with a little pickup in the economy globally. But, it's one of those things to keep in mind. It certainly was not, sort of an automatic success story.
Absolutely. And back when conditions change like that, and when the economy slowed down, which is what they're obviously concerned about in Europe, you've got to look at completely different stocks. Stocks like maybe consumer durables and utilities, and some of the stocks like that, more defensive stocks, if the economy should turn. Speaking of a turning event, you wrote an interesting article. It's called "Is the Stock Market Overlooking the Rising Odds of a GOP Senate Win?" I want to talk to you a little bit about this. First of all, is this going to be a big issue, one way or another, whether or not they win or not? What is the role that politics are really playing on the average investor's portfolio now?
It's interesting. I mean, I feel like there's so much less focus on the economic and market implications of the election this time around versus the last, let's say, two times around. Mostly it's just been, kind of an excuse to talk about how incomes have lagged and all the rest of it. But I almost feel like the reason it's not been an issue is itself the problem, which is nobody on either side really thinks that there are kind of policy solutions that are likely to happen for a lot of the financial and economic issues out there. So that means it just becomes about, well, which sectors might win or lose, things like that. So I do think that at least, say, a month ago, the market just wasn't paying any attention to the prospect that the Republicans seem in good position to take the Senate. So you look at things like the medical device stocks, defense, things like that had not really been moving in a way that suggested the market was handicapping a win. So I don't think, this election, however it turns out, is going to be some kind of a huge swing factor in terms of how the economy performs. Yeah, but it does sort of have its winners and losers, assuming that, that pendulum does swing and we get, kind of a Republican Congress across the board.
Yeah. Well, it's bound to have some impact, but you're right. I guess the more they plan for it, the less of the impact it will have. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, nobody's sort of talking about lifting the sequester on domestic spending freeze. Nobody's really kind of talking about the bigger ticket things that were consuming us in, you know, 2012, for example.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, it's amazing to me thus far, it's been a fairly quiet election.
Mm-hmm.
There just hasn't. In fact, I haven't seen as many ridiculous ads yet. I guess as we get closer to it, we'll probably.
Well, I guess you have to live in those. You really have to live in those states that are being fought like dogfights
right
now. And if you're not in one, it just kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah, and that's and here in Texas, I guess that's just the way it is. All right, interest rates. Okay, now one of the big things that's going to happen this month, supposedly. Of course, I keep reading articles that there are people that are betting otherwise.
They're saying they're going to push it out.
That QE3 ends this month, so the Fed stops buying. There are people that feel like this is going to get extended. What are your thoughts?
No, I don't think QE3 gets extended from here. I feel like they're going to stick with the sunsetting of this bond buying program month by month. Now the debate turns to. Well, exactly when might the Fed see its way clear to start lifting short-term rates? Now the betting is sometime in the middle of 2015. A lot of this market noise is making people think maybe it's later or never. Who knows how you come down on that? I think the bar is very high for the Fed kind of doing a QE4, restarting this whole process.
Really?
If you think back, when did we get QE2 and 3? It was when things really came unglued and the markets – had tantrums, and we were, you know, having stock sell-offs. The credit markets were very, very in revolt, really, and we're not there yet. So I feel like you'd almost have to be wishing for a terrible turn in the markets and a lot of threats to economic growth before the Fed restarted that process, which I also feel, though, is, I mean, I think in general people have a sense of fatigue about that. Nobody really is hoping that the Fed feels the need to enlarge its balance sheet that much more than it already has. And that's why kind of it seems a little bit less like, ooh, wouldn't that be a bonus for investors if the Fed really got generous again? It seems like, oh, no, we have to go through this again. So that's why I do feel like it's very premature to talk about some kind of a QE4.
Okay. Any predictions on when interest rates are going to go up? We can let you put your name in the hat. There's they range everywhere for the fourth quarter of this year. There's still people that feel like that's going to happen, but it looks like right now June of next year seems to be the magic month. Any thoughts?
I think it's June of next year is what they hope to be able to do. It could slide to like September of next year though, because I think that, you know, Yellen Fed is going to err on the side of being late versus early.
I agree. Michael, thank you so much for being with us today and for sharing your thoughts and
glad
for your writings. Your articles are magnificent. Thank you so much for being with us.
All right, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.